This is Intersection, I'm Matthew Petty. 50 years ago this week, Walt Disney World opened its doors. Walt wasn't alive to see his vision become a reality in Central Florida, but his dream for a theme park that improved on the original Disneyland in California has transformed Central Florida in the decades since. A vast swath of land was turned from swamp into a tourism hub, and the arrival of Disney World also signaled a profound shift in the identity of the region. Aaron Goldberg writes about this in his book Buying Disney's World, the story of how Florida swampland became Walt Disney World. WMFE's Talia Blake talked with Goldberg about Disney's profound impact on the economy and the landscape of Central Florida.
Aaron, thank you so much for joining us. How did Walt Disney settle on Central Florida as the East Coast location for his theme park?
That's a great question. There were a few stops along the way. Ultimately, it was sort of all about the weather, to be honest. It was the closest weather he could find to Disneyland. Except they don't get as much rain over in Southern California, but it was almost in St. Louis. There was a look over it in the Niagara Falls, but it was too cold. Washington, D.C., again, weather issues. Outside of New York City, weather again. And then Florida sort of was like the sweet spot where, you know, all year round, you wouldn't have to go crazy with putting it all under one roof, which were like the early, you know, rumors, oh, he's going to enclose it and make air conditioning and blah, 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 blah. But ultimately, Central Florida and the weather sort of won out for everything.
But I mean, how was a swampland appealing to him?
It's crazy, right? Because a lot of folks on his team, some of the members who went out and actually went out to go get the land, were actually pushing towards Daytona. Walt did not want to be near the ocean. He didn't want to compete with the beach. He wanted Central Florida. Or he wanted, I shouldn't say necessarily wanted Central Florida. He wanted away from, you know, either coast. He wanted to sort of be in the center of the state with I-4 coming together and 95, which would allow access for not only the entire state, but basically like the East Coast to get hop on 95 and zip right down. But, you know, he was pretty, you know, without speaking for somebody that I didn't know, but, you know, all the years of research I've done, you know, he was pretty resilient. And once he got an idea in his mind, that was it. So it was sort of, you know, it was moot that the land was swampland at times when they purchased the land. 75% of it was underwater during the year. But that didn't matter. He figured there'd be a way for him to make it usable, which they obviously did.
Orlando is a big tourist location, and the money made by people visiting has a huge impact on our economy. Would that still hold true if Disney World was not here?
Well, that's another great question. You know, I kind of think Orlando would kind of be like Lakeland, maybe. It's hard to say, but it not only did it change Central Florida, it changed the entire state. There's a little parcel of land within Disney property called Bonnet Creek, and it was a parcel that they were not able to purchase. So one side of the land, the back is I-4, and then three sides are owned and bordered by Disney. So that parcel of land was purchased before Disney started purchasing their land. And it was purchased by somebody in Asia. And they randomly, sight unseen, bought this land because they figured, okay, it's near 95. It's not too far from the Space Coast. Perhaps we could do warehousing, industrial. So I think eventually, that probably, you know, with 95 not being too far and things like that, eventually maybe it would have grown, but it certainly wouldn't be what we see today. It would kind of would just be, you know, maybe another sleepy town. If you look at the rest of Florida down the middle, it's kind of, you know, kind of is what it is.
Kind of is what it is.
It is, though.
So I kind of want to piggyback off of what you said. With theme parks comes restaurants and hotels to accommodate visitors. And a lot of people living in Central Florida work in the service industry, and hospitality is one of the leading job sectors. So do you think we would have leaned a little bit more towards a tech industry, or like you were saying with those warehouses or something else, had Disney not been built here?
Yeah, absolutely. There could have been. You know, again, if you think about the Space Coast and, you know, things like that, so you would have technology, you could have manufacturing, land was still cheap, regardless of whether it was, you know, entirely usable or not, warehousing and transportation and logistics. You know, I always think back to, unfortunately, like COVID, when COVID hit, and Orlando and Central Florida was hit so hard when the parks kind of, everything was shuttered. And it sort of gives you like a snapshot of what life could have been like. I mean, it was scary to think about what would have been or could have been if Disney never showed up. I mean, obviously, Tampa's not too far, and there's Busch Gardens, and things would have evolved, but it certainly wouldn't be like what we see now.
And what do you think would have happened to those thousands of acres the theme park sits on had it not been built? You know, what would have happened to that land?
I think it probably would have stayed the way it is, or maybe there'd be more cows, or, you know, maybe more pastures. Disney did a ton of work and tens of millions of dollars to make it usable. I don't know if somebody else would go that far. I mean, obviously we all drive I-4 from time to time, and you go start going towards Tampa, and there's just such big, vast stretches of nothingness. And I feel like, you know, it could very well be the same thing. Who would invest to do water control to get this property usable again? I'm sure somebody would, but not roughly 30,000 acres worth.
Mm-hmm. How has Disney World changed in the past half century, over the past 50 years?
Oh, I mean, to think about what it was when it opened, obviously technology is the ebb and flow of technology over each decade changes everything. It changes our society. But we're talking about 71. It was basically Magic Kingdom Park, very small sort of intimate resort, or the Vacation Kingdom, as they called it. And then the growth through the 80s and 90s and early 2000s is quite remarkable. I think at the end of the day, it lives up more and more to the original idea that Walt was going for with, you know, a city of the future. While it's not a city of the future, but it really is its own city. I mean, there's two cities, Bay Lake and Lake Buena Vista. But I mean, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people every day, tens of thousands spending the night, eating, drinking. There's, you know, medical facilities, there's EMS, everything, the whole nine. So I think that just the evolution of the parks and the theme park experience is, you know, pretty remarkable.
How does Disney continue to change Orlando and the Central Florida area?
Well, I think it's amazing that you could still see growth. You know, 50 years later, you still see parcels of land being purchased and parcels being developed, and you see new outlets and new things like that. And you would think that with basically like the number one tourist destination in the country, that it would be maxed out. One of the reasons why Disney went to Florida to begin with, or to start the whole process over at the theme park, was he was unhappy with what he achieved and happened at Disneyland. So he didn't buy enough land. Hotels, motels, restaurants popped up all over, and it sort of ruined the allure that he was trying to create. So we come down to Florida, and he buys more than enough land to give himself a buffer. And you would think that 50 years later, there would be no land left. But there's still an enormous amount of, you know, prime real estate, maybe not necessarily on the doorstep, but close enough where people can make a way, or, you know, you always see houses booming. I mean, the amount of apartments I feel like goes up in and around the area is, it's kind of crazy. There's always growth.
And speaking of buying enough land down here compared to Disneyland, when Walt was buying the land, he was using a lot of fake names and kind of being really secretive about it, wasn't he?
Yes. Yeah, so the object there was to try and get enough land that he wanted and needed without the public finding out, so that obviously prices wouldn't go through the roof. So, you know, as I mentioned before, Disneyland came and anybody bought up everything they possibly could around him. So the goal was, okay, let's buy more than enough land. I think he initially said 5,000 to 10,000 acres is what he really wanted. We ended up with close to 30,000, over 27,000. And the way he really did it was cash payments. So he paid in cash to not have a paper trail coming back. He put the purchases in shell corporation names. So, you know, about a half a dozen names that didn't lead back to Disney. And he initially titled and deeded them into one of the attorneys that was making the purchases. He deeded them into his name. So basically it was very hard to track down that it was Disney. Although, you know, the Orlando Sentinel, this was like, so, you know, 1965, 1964, somebody spends $5 million worth of land, you know, in a small town, that's going to raise a lot of eyebrows. So it was like a weekly, several time a week column. Who's buying the land? Is it Ford? Is it an airline? Is it, you know, everybody had a rumor and a guess, and their, you know, uncles, cousins, mother, brother in North Dakota said it was going to be this, and, you know, but yeah, so it was like a bit of a, sound like a spy novel when it comes down to the fact that one of the people prospecting for the land was actually, you know, basically a huge CIA operative. His name was Paul Helliwell, and Mr. Helliwell was an attorney from Miami, but was also one of the founding members of the CIA, then called the OSS. And while he's buying land for Disney, he was actually the paymaster he was funding the Bay of Pigs. So he's, you know, trying to topple governments, and here we are buying land. So the dichotomy and the contrast between those two things is pretty remarkable.
CIA to Disney, that is a mix I was not expecting at all.
Right. Yeah.
At all. So what are the pros of having such a force like Disney in our backyard, and are there any cons?
I try not to be a Disney apologist, but I think that, you know, there's obviously a ton of cons and there's a ton of pros. Obviously, we look at the economy before COVID and when things were rip-roaring and ready. You know, they have about 70,000 cast members on site. It's an enormous amount of folks. That brings industry. It brings people from all over the world. I remember reading something in 2016, like more flights internationally, you know, were coming into Florida than basically anywhere else. So it's great economy-wise for the state. However, you know, we go con, it's like all eggs are in one basket. So we unfortunately have a COVID situation and relies heavily on tourism. You know, people also complain about salaries and cost of living and wages. You know, it's a huge global multinational corporation. And, you know, there's always enough for the shareholders, but there's never enough for the folks that are working, unfortunately, for whatever reason that is. I guess that's another topic. But I think overall, I think you have to think that it was a huge plus for the state. It changed everything. I think in the early days when it was announced that they were coming to the state, somebody said, you know, Walt will be like the most welcomed person since Ponce de Leon. So, I mean, everybody was ready for him to come.
Do you think the pros outweigh the cons then?
I think so. I mean, I would think so. Just look at the industry. Look at what came around it, aside from Disney. So we then get Universal. You know, there's SeaWorld, there's so many other timeshares, there's, you know, a whole slew of things that come with the mouse being in town. I'm sure that the folks who are third, fourth, you know, fifth generation Floridians probably liked the living that they had in Orlando and Central Florida before they came. Disney came, the traffic's horrendous, I-4 is horrendous. Hopefully that will alleviate soon with the construction. But I think overall you have to, I'm sure history shows that most towns and places in the country would have killed to have Walt come in, and he was getting offers all the time, so I got to think that it was a good thing.
And lastly, can you imagine a Central Florida without Disney?
Ooh, no. Maybe. I mean, on the coasts, absolutely. So Tampa to the Space Coast, absolutely. I think things are fine. But then when you run down the middle of the state and there's sort of like the dry spot, not really, but yeah, I mean, it would be, I think the state would be so different without Disney, just in general. It would be that's a tough thing to try to wrap your brain around.
Yeah, I mean, what would you be doing? Because you write about Disney.
I exactly. Listen, me and so many other people have glommed onto this company to try and make a living. So, you know, I'm glad they came. And yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see what the future holds for how things are going now that, you know, there's new leadership at the company within, you know, the past year or two. So it's interesting to see how things will go. Hopefully there's no acquisition. Hopefully nobody purchases them. I think that would be a bad thing. You know, people were flirting with that in the 80s, the 90s, and 2000s of hostile takeovers and things like that. So I hope things sort of stay par for the course. I think it would be best for, you know, the state, for the town. There's still so much land. I mean, they still have like a third of what they purchase is not developed. So they could still really keep, you know, a third of about 30,000 acres. That's a considerable amount. So maybe there are some new parks on the horizon. Who knows?
WMFE's Talia Blake talking with Aaron Goldberg, author of Buying Disney's World, the story of how Florida swampland became Walt Disney World.